This is Generation Justice, a multiracial project that trains youth to harness the power of community through media, narrative, and critical consciousness. I'm Emilia Beauvillette.
And I'm Junko Featherston. Tonight, we dedicate our hour to Indigenous leaders who have sacrificed for the protection of sacred water and land.
We'll hear from Brennan Nastasio, a water protector from San Felipe and Zuni Pueblos, who shares his experience at Standing Rock and the legal charges he faces today.
We will also hear from Kealoha Peshota, who has been a leader in the movement to stop the construction of a 30-meter telescope, or TMT, on the sacred mountain Mauna Kea in Hawaii.
Tonight, as we discuss ongoing fights for sacred land, we want to remind you that we're broadcasting on stolen Indigenous land.
As always, we have great community events, and our youth producers have chosen some great music, starting with Revolution by The Score.
Brennan Nastasio is a water protector from San Felipe and Zuni Pueblos who has experienced racism and injustice while facing federal charges that stem from his time at Standing Rock.
Brennan joins us to share his experience in the movement to inform us on how we can help support water protectors in our communities.
Here is GJ correspondent Jonathan Alonzo speaking with Brennan Nastasio.
This is Jonathan Alonzo with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with water protector Brennan Nastasio. Brennan is an Indigenous man from San Felipe Pueblo who demonstrated exceptional heroism while ensuring the safety of men, women, and children at Standing Rock, and as a result has directly experienced systemic racism. Brennan, welcome to Generation Justice. Would you please tell us more about yourself?
Again, my name is Brennan Nastasio. I am from San Felipe Pueblo on my mother's side. And I am from Zuni Pueblo as well on my father's side. I was in Standing Rock for a little over 6 months. While being there, I ended up getting three charges. One state charge of terrorizing, which ultimately got dropped. And then I have two federal felony charges, one being civil disorder and the other one being use of a fire to commit a federal crime. And it's been 2.5 years that I've been on pretrial services, and it's going to be 3 years in November, and I still don't have a trial date.
So originally, what was it that inspired you to travel to Standing Rock?
My son at the time was going to school in Denver, and one of his teachers was from Standing Rock, and they were going around the community, letting the community know in Denver what would happen if the pipeline should bust. And it kind of made me proud, you know, as a parent, to see that my son was really into the environment, not only for himself, but for, you know, others as well. And so they kind of volunteered me to take a bunch of donations that they had been collecting for over a month. And then we decided to leave on Labor Day weekend.
And did you plan on staying as long as you did?
No, I didn't. The funny thing is that we're supposed to be there, you know, just for you know, the Labor Day weekend. But after arriving there in Standing Rock, like 15 minutes later, we caught the tail end of a prayer walk that Dennis Banks was leading. And where the prayer walk ended, we witnessed oil pipeline security unleashing attack dogs on innocent women and children and bystanders. And, you know, watching highway patrolmen and, you know, sheriff officers at the top of the hill and just standing there not doing nothing, it kind of really ticked me off because, you know, anywhere else they'd be calling animal control right away. But it seemed to me that these people were enjoying what they were watching and knowing that things like this was happening, I couldn't see myself leaving anytime soon.
And so out of all of that, what was the exact moment that you knew, like, I'm going to put aside everything else in my life and I'm going to stay here?
When I watched this one lady get bit right on the chest, the dog just jumped up and bit her. And I was like, whoa. And that's when a lot of the people that were, you know, in prayer kind of formed a barricade around the lady to protect her from getting bit anymore. And just watching that just was like, you know, unbelievable. You see people not knowing each other is coming together and helping one another's out. And I really thought that was like, it was really something to see and to be a part of. And not only that, you know, all these different tribes coming together for one sole purpose of having clean water, clean air, and, you know, just being there for each other was really something for me that touched me dearly.
What can you tell us about what happened in Standing Rock that led us to this moment?
There was a lot of things that happened in Standing Rock that led to this moment. One of the most things that I can, like, play back in my mind goes back to the day that one of the oil pipeline security workers was barreling through camp. People were trying to stop him because he had already been flashing an assault rifle, trying to, I guess, intimidate people into, you know, just letting him go. But the protectors that were there were persistent in, you know, not only the security of everybody's well-being, but to also, you know, stop this guy. And in doing so, there were a few people that kind of blocked him in and kind of ran him off the road. And at that point in time, I was taking people back to the camp that needed some medical assistance. And I heard over the radio that there was a guy making his way to camp with a loaded assault rifle. And I was thinking to myself, like, is this really happening? And so coming back over the hill to the backwater bridge, I'm seeing this guy with an assault rifle pointing it at people. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like really seeing this. This is like something you see in a movie, you know? The first thing that comes to my mind is, where's my nephew and where's my son at? Because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have been there. And at that point in time, I knew I had to do something because there was a lot of women and a lot of elders and a lot of innocent people that don't need to see all this going down. And so, you know, we kept him at bay. We had him in the water and we de-escalated a situation that could have possibly been almost like a life and death situation.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time was probably one of the most significant things that I had ever witnessed there at that camp, which leads us here today.
So as of today, what are the charges that you're still dealing with?
Well, as of today, I'm still facing two felony federal charges, one being a civil disorder and the other one being a use of a fire to commit federal crime. And the civil disorder, that charge hadn't been used since the late 60s and early 70s during the Black Liberation Movement and during the time that they were trying to protest the Vietnam War. And I believe they made these charges up to go after key people in the movement so that way people would be discouraged in trying to protest anything, you know, that they felt to be right. And I think that's one of the reasons why that I had gotten charged with these charges.
And so I'm also just curious from what you mentioned earlier, can you tell me more about Pueblo Camp?
Pueblo Camp, I started Pueblo Camp the weekend of Labor Day weekend, September 2016. There was a handful of us that were Pueblo people from New Mexico. There was me, my nephew, my son, and the famous cartoonist, Ricardo Cate. Everybody was like, Lakota's over here, you know, everybody was all singling themselves out, and we were like the only Pueblos there. And so we weren't just from San Felipe or Zuni or Cochiti or San Domingo. And then, you know, pretty soon Pueblo Camp stuck with us because my nephew and my son and everybody was there from Pueblo Camp. People were like, oh, well, go get the Pueblo boys, you know, because we were hands-on with everything, you know. Mm-hmm. We were out there chopping wood. We were out there distributing water and food and helping people set up tents and stuff like that. And so it kind of stuck with us when mm-hmm. they would call people over the mic and be like, hey, where are the Pueblo boys at? So we ended up being Pueblo Camp.
That's cool. Can you tell us more about the event and film that will be shown at the Guild on Saturday, August 10th?
Yeah. So the documentary, it's a little documentary. It's called The Eagle and Condor. What the film is about is the different healings that are taking place with all the different people that attended Standing Rock. And I'm featured in that documentary, which was filmed by my adopted aunt, you know, Paulette Moore. And what it really depicts on is the things that happened in Standing Rock and how they're dealing and healing with what had transpired there.
And what do you hope people will understand after watching the film?
What I'm hoping for is that people will understand this was really a touchy subject, a situation, and like a historic moment in our time that has really affected a lot of people that was there fighting for, you know, what we presume to be right, you know, like the right to have clean water and the right to have clean air and the right to have clean land.
Mm-hmm.
And these water protectors that we call them, they sacrifice a lot. I mean, we've all had our little racism issues and stuff like that, but this was a little bit more heightened. We're having to deal with not only the government, the corporations, but the people from the area who not only declined the pipeline to go through their city, but to like brush it off on, you know, natives just down the river, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah, there's a lot of things that have happened, and the people that were there are having to deal with a lot of PTSD
mm-hmm.
and trying to, I guess, return to their normal lives. I could imagine that that was difficult for mm-hmm. them.
So as you've mentioned, a lot of people sacrificed a lot in Standing Rock. And I'm wondering, at least for you, how does transitioning back to business as usual daily life look?
It's definitely been a roller coaster ride. At first, trying to find a job was really hard because, you know, filling out the whole paperwork and then, you know, they go and do a background check on you. And the first thing that pops up is, you know, you're facing two federal cases and charges and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then they're like, oh, well, I think maybe when you're done with that, maybe we can, you know, take a look and think about hiring you again. That was one of the main issues I had as far as trying to transition back into the community and back how when things used to be. But I know for a fact that I could imagine it's going to be a lot harder for people that were incarcerated after the whole Standing Rock movement, you know, trying to transition back from being incarcerated to the reality of things. Just like my nephew, Dion Ortiz, who was also one of the federal defendants on the whole Standing Rock case. And I could imagine how hard it is for him to transition back from being incarcerated, going through the whole legal system and trying to, you know, move on with his life back in the community. And I think maybe I would want for him to, you know, get some help or seek some assistance for him so that way it could be a better transition for him.
And how can our community support you?
Well, right now, I think I'm looking for support in getting my story out. I'm one of the last remaining federal defendants that hadn't taken a plea deal. And I'm willing to take this to trial for all the right reasons because I believe we didn't do nothing wrong there except mm-hmm. for wanting clean water and wanting, and you know, for us to be just like anybody else. I want us to be heard mm-hmm. because for so long we've been silenced with everything else that's going on in the world.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I guess what I want to add is we're still here. We're still struggling. We're still fighting for what we presume to be right. And we just want everybody to know that if there's anything that you could help anybody with, especially the water protectors, is to thank them and to let them know that they're not forgotten because they too have sacrificed a whole lot for us to have this platform that we now have after Standing Rock.
Thank you so much, Brennan. It is so important to have leaders like you share your experiences and what you do regarding Standing Rock. The significance of your work will go down in history.
Thank you, Brennan. You are very influential in the way you tell your story. We all hear and support your resilience and resistance.
Coming up next is Lines by Skip Marley, a song chosen by Brennan himself.
not on my watch. Yeah, if that. Took all my rights away. Yeah, if that. Telling me how to pray. Yeah, if that. Won't let us demonstrate. Yeah, wrong. Yeah, if that. Thinking I don't belong. Yeah, if that. Hiding behind a gun. Yeah, if that. Hoping we're gonna run. Wrong. We are the lions. We are the chosen. We're gonna shine now.
Kealoha Peshoda has been a leader in the fight against construction of a 30-meter telescope atop the sacred Mauna Kea in Hawaii for more than 15 years.
Kealoha is from Hilo, Hawaii, and she's a plaintiff on this ongoing legal battle to protect Mauna Kea and has held peaceful resistance on the mountain this summer as a leader and spokesperson.
Now GJ correspondent Jonathan Alonzo speaks with Kealoha Peshoda about what is happening in Hawaii.
This is Jonathan Alonzo with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Kealoha Peshoda. Kealoha is one of the leaders of the Protect Mauna Kea movement and is the lead plaintiff suing the company attempting to build an 18-story telescope atop the sacred mountain Mauna Kea in Hawaii. Kealoha, welcome to Generation Justice.
Oh, thank you so much, Jonathan, and I'm very honored to be here.
Kealoha, will you please tell us more about yourself?
Well, I used to work at the observatories. A lot of people don't know that. I worked there for the British government for 12 years on Mauna Kea. I've also become the lead advocate along with about six of the rest of our litigants. And our most recent one we had as many as 18 litigants in one of the contested case hearings, which is just an administrative legal process one has to go through in Hawaii. And yeah, we've been fighting. The first case we fought was against the NASA and Keck telescope expansion in 2002. Over time, we've actually stopped about over 100 telescopes, believe it or not, just because some of them were multi-year arrays with maybe 65 to 100 telescopes. But we have stopped at least, I would say, over 100. With the Keck project, we won in federal and state court. But these are things that we're having to do because we are indigenous.
Will you start by telling us what Mauna Kea means to the indigenous people of Hawaii?
Oh, absolutely. That's the primary question. Mauna Kea represents sort of the zenith of our genealogical ties to creation. It's our origin place. It's the burial ground of our most sacred and revered ancestors, including such ancestors as navigators that first brought us to Hawaii thousands of years ago. And also it is the home of our Akua, the creator, our gods and goddesses.
And how would you describe your personal connection to Mauna Kea?
Well, my personal connection first actually comes through as a practitioner, meaning a Native Hawaiian practitioner who practices certain ceremony and ritual on Mauna Kea. Some of our primary ceremonies are we track the solstice and equinox over the 26,000-year cycle, which is believed to be actually Proto-Polynesia, that some of those practices and temple ceremonies done on Mauna Kea were brought to Hawaii when the Hawaiian people came here. So that's my first relationship. My second was that I did work as a telescope system specialist, which is just a big word for the one who sets up all the observing and controls the instrumentation for astronomers visiting on Mauna Kea. And then my third is as a protector, a kia'i, like there are so many right now everywhere around the earth, standing and helping us stand to protect our mountain and hopefully all sacred sites.
And can you share with us the history of this fight to protect the sacred mountain?
I think we began the specific fight against the TMT or the 30-meter telescope in about 2008. We began the environmental processes and the cultural impact statements that are required by state law, all starting way back then. We had written to Gordon Moore, who is the largest individual funder for the TMT project. He is the co-inventor of the Intel Pentium processor. And we started out with an open letter asking him to please not build his telescope on our mountain. And then we ended up having to go into repeated court and legal battles, very protracted over this decade. The Supreme Court of Hawaii ruled that their permit was satisfactory. We don't really agree with that ruling. It was pretty much based upon bad legal logic, degradation, and like the degradation principle that it was degraded, therefore it won't hurt to degrade it more. So then they gave notice to construct, and that's when everyone had to go into action. You know, I mean, this movement has been a combination of using legal as well as on the ground tactics and strategy. You kind of need both to maintain our positioning. And now we've had as many as 5,000 people up at the crossroads to block any construction. The state, however, is blocking Native Hawaiians from ascending the mountain for religious and cultural purposes. And so therefore, we are blocking the construction. So both the state and the Kia'i are blocking.
And how does the history of the Hawaiian people's relationship with the U.S. affect this legal fight?
Well, I think it comes into play. I mean, Mauna Kea is a great unifier because it is actually our temple of peace and aloha. By its nature, that's what it was created for and to be according to our cultural beliefs. But our historical poor relationship with the United States becomes kind of amplified here as well, because just being Hawaiian is political, and us just trying to ascend to do ceremony and practice our culture and religion has become a political action as well. Like so many of our Moku Honu brothers and sisters, you know, people of the Americas also are facing the same thing. It is our very nature and our existence that challenges the United States, as it should, because the United States is not followed through. They have not kept promises. They've broken treaties. Same thing with Hawaii. We have broken treaties also.
And so what is the current situation for those protecting Mauna Kea?
Well, we basically have our elders. I just need to make a side comment. That's very hard for us to see our elders get arrested. And it's challenging, but our elders have asked that they be allowed to do this. They want to take the stand. So we have a frontline group of elders that will take the first arrest. We have also Mana Wahine. Those are the powerful women, and most of them are quite young. They're kind of standing second line. And then the majority of us have to stay on the sides and watch those arrests happen. That's what happened recently. But the state currently is a little bit in a quandary. And I think because the storms are coming, the governor has now released the executive proclamation that he put on that allowed the state to override many laws and rules of engagement. We have had 31 elders arrested, I believe, and they're now back up there, by the way. They took bail in the court dates and things like that. So they've called big riot police forward. The National Guard is up there, but they're not armed and they have no enforcement at this time. So, you know, we're dealing with all kinds of levels of enforcement, law enforcement. And I do think that we are making headway with them through the principles of Kapu Aloha, which are our gift to the nonviolent expression, because we will not advance, but we will continue to stand for protecting our sacred mountain, as many people are standing for sacred places around the earth.
And I know you've mentioned it a little bit, but can you give me an account of what happened on the morning of July 17th?
The arrests were very, very hard for us, but we have methodology. So we have these young people, men and women, who wear the blue shirts, and the blue shirts are the Kapu Aloha shirts. Their job is to make sure that if anybody's having difficulty, you know, because people want to rise up and defend their kupunas and they don't want to see them arrested, that doesn't mean they're going to hurt any police officers, but they might try to resist and, you know, try to take their hands off of the elders, you know. So the elders asked us to stay on the sides and we are to remain silent. We're not to call out anything like this. And so that's what happened that day. We stayed silent. Everybody had visible tears flowing, including the officers of the state DOCARE and the police officers who were standing there. And then they brought riot police up in the middle of the arrests of our elders, which, you know, was really a dangerous thing because there's so much emotion. And having riot police in full riot gear with tear gas and masks and batons and, you know, guns and things was really, really difficult. But I have to say, I'm so proud of our people who maintain the kapu, the prohibition and the nonviolent position. You know, people need to know that that kapu aloha that we're implementing is our way of pushing back on this corporate culture that is actually implementing our police forces against us. Because that kapu aloha allows for space for compassion to come through even from the officers. Because when we let them know that we understand that they are in this predicament, that the state is using, you know, legalized sanction force against its own population, that we're hoping that the police force feel the compassion also, so that it's kind of what the father of nonviolent resistance, Gandhi and Martin Luther King, showed, that when we are nonviolent, we create space for compassion to come forth. And that's why it's a sacrifice. I mean, we may get hurt in the process, but we are willing to sacrifice that for a better world, you know?
What has been the role of the Native Hawaiian women in the work to protect this land?
Well, you know, thank you so much for asking that question, because we get that a lot lately. We have male spokesperson, but we have many, many women leaders, and they are, it's like birthing of a new nation. This is like birthing of a new earth right now. And I think the women right now are playing the role. For us, Mother Earth is called Papahanaumokuakea. And I think Earth Mother is reaching out and calling out to all of the women on Earth to take the proper place. You know, it doesn't mean to overturn, you know, the matriarchy doesn't overturn the patriarchy. It just balances it out. And I think that's what all of our women are doing. They're standing forth. They're willing to get hurt to do it. And many of our young women are really standing strong. And that's so beautiful. And that's encouraging their elders to stand also. The elders have stood, though, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think they feel more free, that they feel freedom that they didn't have, even to, for example, speak our mother tongue, our language. Many young people are using our language now, and that's so powerful. So, I mean, to me, I kind of say, I think both men and women were choosing to conspire with Earth Mother for a better world right now, to push back on that corporate culture that seeks to extinguish our humanity. We're pushing back, and we're not going to stand down.
So here in New Mexico, one of our sacred sites, Chaco Canyon, is being threatened by proposed plans for oil extraction. What advice do you have for indigenous communities who face similar attacks to their sacred lands?
You know, I have had an opportunity to meet some of the people from over there and have seen some of the incredible sacred sites. I would only recommend what all the people around sacred sites are doing is to continue to stand for it against the extractive nature. We really need to stand for just a better world. The corporate culture has to do better. And the only way they're going to do better is if we stand for it and push back, and in a nonviolent way. It can all be done without violence, but this is our way. You know, like even in our case, we traveled to meet the people in San Francisco to extend our hand to say, hey, you can do better. We want to help you do better, because science and culture need to come together for the protection of the earth. And same thing with the corporate structure. They need to do better too. And by standing up, we're showing them that there's a better way.
And what gives you hope in this movement?
What gives me hope is the magic. We call it Mauna miracles. Mauna is mountain in Hawaiian. The Mauna miracles that happen is when you protect the sacred sites, all of the ancestors come and help you. You know, the ones that are seen and not seen. And all of the deities and the powers, the elementals of earth stand with you. And that's what people need to do, is that gives me hope when we reconnect ourselves back to earth and to those forces, because they are what actually govern the earth. But we have to reach out to them and ask them to come and to help us. And I see a lot of young people doing that today. And that gives me hope also.
Thank you for sharing that. How can our community here in New Mexico support those protecting Mauna Kea?
The first thing is, we ask you to just join us in prayer for the whole earth. The prayer is the most powerful thing. They can speak it out loud about it. They can donate whatever they wish, from sending small things. But please, I mean, the strongest thing is the prayer. And if some can come, we definitely, you know, welcome people to join us. And to protect your sites, though, too. We need to protect the sites everywhere on earth. So joining together is what is really going to keep us strongest, yeah. And that's what I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would just like to say that kukia'i mauna, that means, you know, we are the protectors. And kukia'i honua, we are the protectors of the earth. And we need to stop them calling us protesters because we're committing civil assistance, not civil disobedience, because we're helping them not break the laws of nature and not break sometimes literally the law. I just would like to say, you know, aloha to everyone out there and keep standing for the greater good and have faith.
Kiloa, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. And just from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for all that you're doing to protect Indigenous lands.
And thank Generation Justice. And please share, and we'll share, okay? We promise to share so we can all join together, okay?
Yeah, of course. For Generation Justice, I'm Jonathan Alonso.
Kealoha, you're a huge inspiration because of your dedication to this battle for keeping Mauna Kea safe. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kealoha, for telling your story. Your efforts are not going unnoticed. Your perseverance and commitment to keeping sacred lands preserved for generations to come are so appreciated.
Now here's Guardians by Paniolo Prince and his Queen Maile, a song chosen by Kealoha that speaks to being a guardian of sacred land.
You failed to see that for family, we will fight to protect this world for eternity. New generations, guardians standing right here. All the children of Moana Nui are care. Papa Earth, Mother Wakea, Sky Father, Pacific Ocean, sisters and brothers.
Now it's time for our community calendar. As a community, it is important to collectively work to heal our bodies and minds. This can be in many forms, and the two events we have today showcase this understanding.
That's right. The first event is all about healing your body. The Red and Green Veg Fest Albuquerque takes place Saturday, August 10th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with speakers, vendors, and cooking demos to show the possible health benefits of going vegan.
This event will be held at the Jewish Community Center of Albuquerque at 5520 Wyoming Boulevard Northeast. For more information, call 505-332-0446.
Next, the movie The Eagle and the Condor from Standing Rock with Love and fundraiser takes place at the Guild Cinema at 3405 Central Avenue Northeast.
This documentary and fundraiser will be on Saturday, August 10th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. And it serves as a reminder to the community that the battles regarding Standing Rock are far from over, while still giving people time to reflect and become more informed.
This event also celebrates the anniversary of the Pueblo Revolt that happened over 300 years ago this week.
Brennan Estacio and Paulette Moore will speak and answer questions about the documentary and Standing Rock.
Contact any of the Facebook pages, Indigenous Rights Center, the Red Nation, Indigenous Design and Planning Institute, or the Guild for more information.
Now here's the song, Together We Rise, by Hawane Rios, to remind us of the connectedness of our movements.
Remembering we're stronger, united than apart. And we'll keep singing Ho'okai Ka'umama.
We hope you've enjoyed this hour of Indigenous Resistance. We'd like to thank our guests, Brennan Estacio and Kealoha Peixota.
Tonight's hour of radio was produced by Kateri Zuni and Roberta Rael. And thank you to our interviewer, Jonathan Alonso, and to Pilar Montfaletto for production assistance.
We want to give a big shout out to all of our youth producers. We cannot do what we do without you. Generation Justice would also like to thank KUNM for bringing the voices of the young people to you, KUNM listeners.
Our website is generationjustice.org, where you can check out all of our multimedia work and listen to our podcasts, which are also available on SoundCloud and iTunes.
We're also active on social media. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the Con Alma Health Foundation, and of course, all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking Donate.
Our opening song is Youth of the Nation by POD. Our last songs of the night include We Survived by Climbing Poetry and Sincerely by Stefan. I'm Emilio Bovalet.
And I'm Junko Featherston. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Good night, New Mexico.
Summon the strength of all those who came before us and all those coming. We must win freedom in our fingers when the world gives us nothing but believing a new day.